This is episode 111 of The Variety Artist. This is John Abrams, your host and that guy that interviews successful variety artists from around the world every single week. My guest today stays prepared for anything. He's diversified his performing and product company to get through any crisis. You probably know him as the owner of Wonder Imagery, but he's so much more. Don't let his calm Southern gentleman demeanor fool you. This is an interview we can all learn from. Enjoy.
Welcome to The Variety Artist, providing aspiring artists and entertainers with in-depth discussions from top performers from all over the world. So get ready to book some gigs, make some money, and have some fun with your host, John Abrams.
He's the perfect person to talk to about multiple streams of income. He performs creative school programs for elementary schools and libraries. He casts light on bizarre Carolina legends in his Carolina Shadow Show. He's the owner of Wonder Imagery, creating silks for the top magicians in the world. He has his own magic academy where he teaches children magic. He has his own mobile escape games. He's even Santa during the holidays. Variety artist, I give you Tim Sonnefeld.
Hey, thanks, John. Thanks for having me. I guess when people hear that, they think this guy can't keep a job.
It sounds like you keep a lot of jobs.
At times, yes.
Well, normally I do fan questions at the end, but some of your fans had same questions I had. So I'm going to ask you some questions. Some of them are from me and some of them are from our fans. But we're going to start with the obvious. Okay. Annie Banani, the balloon storyteller, asks, and this is the exact same question I had to start out. I would like to know how you juggle everything. How do you do it?
Well, most jugglers at some point have a drop or two. And I think I drop from time to time as well. You know, I mean, we do our best and try to balance it out. Now, some of the work is seasonal, so that makes it a little easier. The Santa work is obviously November, December. That's pretty much all I do during that time. Mm-hmm. The mobile escape games, that's something that I'm still trying to get the ball rolling. I had a marketing plan to roll that out really fully this spring for graduation parties and prom parties. But none of that happened. So yeah, that ball is back in my pocket for now. So done a few of those, but escape rooms are a passion of mine. And I wanted to open an escape business. Financially, realistically, and time-wise, there was just no way. So this was the best way to do that.
Yeah, I love those escape rooms. I did one with my kids a couple of years ago, and we escaped with 2 seconds left.
Yeah, it's fun. We were doing them pretty regularly. There were three or four in our area, and my family, the four of us, and then my son's girlfriend, my daughter's boyfriend, we are a team, you know, and we go, and man, we have learned how to work really efficiently in those, so they are a lot of fun.
Now, did you start with just one item? I named, I don't know what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, like 7 different things that you do. So did you start with one, or did you have an idea for a couple of different ones, or how did that all come about?
When I started performing for magic, obviously like most folks, I started with birthday parties. And when we started our family, I realized I didn't want to be tied up every weekend. So I started doing some corporate stuff too, and I was doing quite a bit of corporate stuff, and then 9/11 happened and in September. So I had a full December of bookings that year, and then all of those canceled because they were like, we're going to do something for the community, something for our employees instead of just having this, you know, lavish banquet. So I lost all that work, and I talked to a couple of friends, and I'm thinking, all right, what is still going to happen? What is still going to go on even when the economy gets bad? Mm-hmm. Right now, we're in a situation where even these have had to change because of the virus, but they didn't change because of the economy. And the two things that I found that are going to go on are school and birthdays.
Yes.
Well, I already knew at that point I didn't really want to focus on birthday parties. And in my market, birthdays don't bring a whole lot of money. I thought I'm going to focus on school. So that's really when I started. And I had gone full time in 2001. January of 2001, I left my day job. Mm. Was it a great year to do that in retrospect?
Perfect timing. But you learned a lesson early, though.
I did learn a lesson early. I've started focusing on the school market, and Mark Daniel was a good bit of help to me. I had already been doing libraries for about 2 years, so I kind of had that under my belt. So I started making my library show into a school show, and I would market that. And in 2002, I wrote my first school show, which was Pirates of the Carolinas, which now is just Pirates. it's a reading motivation program, but it's also based on, you know, historically on pirates of this region.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, when I was doing the corporate work, I had to enter into some magic competitions. So I actually did a manipulation act, and there's a YouTube video out there of a TV thing I did years ago with a group of magicians in South Carolina of my manipulation work. So if they want to, I can send you the link. You can put that on the show notes page if folks want to see it.
I'll go ahead and put that on your show notes page. Absolutely. Because that's something I didn't know about you.
Yeah, it's a very young me. And, you know, I entered competitions. I did the whole dove thing and the candles, and I never did cards. That's kind of how my lecturing, you know, for magicians started. I started lecturing on the manipulations and the body loads and those types of things. So that's kind of how it all got going.
Well, now, how has this recent crisis affected your business? Because obviously you're not doing elementary schools now because all of the schools are closed, right? And libraries are canceling left and right. At least they are for me. How has that affected your business?
The last performance I did was on Friday, March the 13th.
Hey, me too. It was March 12th.
Yep. So, and then our governor on Sunday the 15th shut schools down. So I haven't been back in a school. And even before we were in lockdown mode, I didn't have any work because, you know, I don't do birthday parties. Now I've since come up with a virtual show that I could do, but I've yet to market it because I'm too busy doing my Discover Magic part and keeping the workshops going.
Mm-hmm.
But so that stopped, and I thought, oh my gosh, you know, magicians are not working. So Wonder Imagery, the product line, that's probably going to stop completely. And I've been surprised. I still get orders a little along. I sold a couple of backdrops. So, you know, that was all very welcome.
Let's talk about that Wonder Imagery then. How did you start out making silks for magicians?
Yeah, that's a fascinating story. So when I was doing the manipulation lectures, I had a trick where I would show a silk with a dove on it. I would wrap that up. I would cover it with a red silk. I would produce a dove, and then I would show the silk again that had the border and the dove on it. Now it's just the border. So like the dove came to life off of the silk.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I started selling that product when I was lecturing. And I was buying them from a company. It was Mystique Magic out of Oklahoma, I think, was where they were. And the guy was silk screening silks for magicians. To my knowledge, he wasn't even a magician. And I know some of your listeners are going to remember his name. I think his name was Joe. But anyway, I was buying those silks from him, you know, six sets at a time because I wasn't lecturing much. Well, he decided, I'm not really a magician. I started doing this for a friend. I'm not going to do this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So my source was gone.
Oh.
So I tried to get in touch with a guy in Atlanta, Mark Trimble, who some of your listeners may remember as well. He did custom silks, all hand-painted. And he did a couple of projects for me. Mark was the guy behind the fourth volume of Rice's Encyclopedia of Silk Magic.
Okay.
And he had asked me to help illustrate that. I'm not an illustrator, but I'm pretty decent in Photoshop and Illustrator. So what we did was we took images from the old books and adjusted them to be whatever they needed to be for the new book. So it was still in the style of Francis Martineau, who did the originals. Well, I called up Mark and I said, hey, Mark, I need some silks. And I could never get him to return my call. I mean, never. I mean, months went by. So I thought, you know what? He's not the only guy who can do this. So I started researching. Turns out he was the only guy who did that.
Oh,
so I found one company in California, and I'm clear across the country in South Carolina, but they didn't really want to do small quantities. I dug and dug and dug. I found a company in my state, oddly enough, that did prototyping for big name designers, Ralph Lauren, Tommy Hilfiger. For Fashion Week in New York, for instance, they want to debut three new dresses and they need this special fabric. Well, they're not going to run 10,000 yards. They're going to do 5 yards, just enough to make the dresses.
Mm-hmm.
This company does that. Well, I found out that they could print on silk. So I went up, I had a meeting with them. They were like, yeah, we've never done anything like this. This would be great. Perfect. well, we don't do any sewing. We can't hem it.
Okay. So, problem number two.
Yeah, problem number two. So they said, but we do have a company or a lady who can hem them for us. So that's great. Well, she's in Wilmington, so we'd have to ship it to her. So now I'm paying shipping twice and all this. So anyhow, eventually, this was in 2005. They decided, we don't want to do your stuff anymore. And I originally only wanted my custom dove silks at the time. And I only wanted to be able to, I thought it'd be cool if I could offer custom silks to the magic world. Mm-hmm. And Glenn Strange, who's a dear friend, we've been 30 years. He went with me up there. And he's on the way back. He said, you know, if you had a few products that you could sell that were silk products for magicians, that you could keep a little more in the pipeline with them rather than only once every 3 months ordering a custom thing, mm-hmm. they might appreciate your business a little more. So I started developing products at that point, and that was, you know, all thanks to Glenn.
Wow.
First product was Hopkins, the well-dressed hair, and it was a change bag routine that was basically a silk version of Hippity Hop Rabbits. Mm-hmm. That came out at Kadabra 2005 in August.
Well, by the way, that was one of my questions, but it was also Brett Bolich's question too. I want to give him a shout out, a little terrific magician out of Southern California. He's a great guy.
Yeah, good guy. Good guy.
He's a good guy. So that has gotten you a little business through this Corona crisis thing?
Yeah, a little bit. I did a free lecture for my Facebook group, through the Wonder Imagery Facebook group. And I think I had about 60 guys come on to watch that. And I had a little bit of sales after that. Most of this was stuff they could do that they already had at home, but I wasn't trying to sell anything, but I got a few orders. So it was kind of nice. Yeah.
By the way, a stroke of genius on your part. Everybody's ordering these green screens. You offer a green screen. Is that right?
That's right. We can do a green screen. Yep. Different formats.
For all those virtual shows that are becoming very popular right now.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. So Chris Johnson, one of you probably just listened to his interview. It was just a couple of weeks ago. One of the top school assembly entertainers in the country asks, what are some of the steps you take to launch your product line, any particular product line, to get it rocking in terms of income?
The product line, as far as the products for magicians, I launched that by going to conventions. Kadabra was a mainstay for a long time, and it still is. I still am at Kadabra. I'm not at the end of the summer. I'm usually so tired, but these days, since I'm not any younger, I don't always go. But I was planning to be there this year, and if they have it, I'll still be there as a dealer. I was there every year for, gosh, a big number of years as a dealer, and I also lectured a lot for Mark at Kadabra. And I do some other conventions as well, and I build a mailing list from the convention. So I'll have a giveaway for people to register, give me their email list. And I think the Wonder Imagery email list is right about 2,000 email addresses right now.
And then every time you have a new product, you just blast out.
Blast it out. Yep. To there in the Facebook group. I usually give the Facebook group a heads up of a day or two before I blast it out to the main list. So, but yep, that's it. That's pretty much emailing a few conventions. I probably don't do more than two conventions on average a year.
Conventions this year for me were like a savings account.
Yeah.
Because I registered for all sorts of conventions this year, and then all of them canceled. So I got refunds from all of them, including, you know, Magic Live and different ones. So.
That's right. Yeah, I did Magic Live the last 2 years ago. And it was an interesting experience. It's not really my demographic. I didn't... not a lot of kid and family show guys there, at least that were willing to talk about it in public.
Yeah, this would have been the first one I've been to. Wasn't to be. All right, Adam Gertzikov, writer of the very popular blog Clown Link, says, do you have any passive income streams where you're not actually working on the stuff, but still selling?
I would say the closest thing to that is the Wonder Imagery product line, because when we print a batch of silks, you know, I probably do a couple of dozen of whatever I'm running low on. So that'll come in from my print facility. I'll package them up. And then, you know, when orders come in, I send out the stuff. So that's about as passive as it gets for me. And some of those are downloads. So it's nice when I get an order for a download because I don't have to touch it.
You just look in your bank account. You're like, thank you.
Right. That's right. There goes $8 because those are basically pretty inexpensive, the downloads.
$8 is $8, man.
That's right. $8. Every $8 is much appreciated, especially these days.
That's right. Now, Eddie Rice Jr., owner of A Number One Best Events, asks, how do you go about making themed magic to suit the libraries or schools? Although they're closed right now, but they will be open soon, hopefully.
Yeah. So for schools, I used to do all reading programs, and they were different themed reading programs. Like I had a music themed reading program, but about 3 years ago, I shifted focus because I thought, I'm not working as much as I want in schools at that point. And I thought if I have some other shows that are curriculum based, then that's going to be more of a diverse offering for the school. So I started putting together and I licensed a few from other people, Doug Shear for one. I licensed his Wacky Science and his Uncle Sam program. And I started writing a couple of others. So I have a recycling show. That's kind of how it started. I looked at what needs might be out there. And then if I'm going to write a show along that theme, then I try to find the concepts that are important for the schools for me to get across and then try to match magic or comedy or something with it. It doesn't always have to be magic for me. That way I don't go looking for a magic trick and then try to force it into a particular piece of information that I want to convey.
Yeah.
To me, that's a much easier and much more natural way to go about it. And I know guys that do it the other way. And occasionally I'll find take Josh J's Balance, for instance. Yeah. I saw that and I thought, yeah, I'm going to put that in one of my shows. And I found a way to naturally fit it into my environmental program. But rarely it happens that way. Most often it's the content first and then I figure out a way to illustrate that.
Yeah, I think most good entertainers or good school entertainers take that approach. Nothing against anybody who does it the opposite way, but this is the way I do it also. Find the concept first. And then it also opens it up to, you can do magic, you can do balloons, you can do hula, you can do
a puppet. Yep.
I myself do all sorts of crazy physical challenges during my shows that match the concepts. It doesn't have to always be mad. Just like you're saying, it doesn't have to always be magic. It doesn't have to always be whatever particular art that you're doing.
Right. For instance, in my school and library shows, some of my school shows, all of my library shows, I have a recurring puppet. He is a duck. His name is Larry. Larry is beloved by all my library clients. But if there's one thing that I want the kids to remember, I'd let Larry do it because they're going to remember that puppet in his material much longer than they're going to remember mine. In fact, my libraries, when I'm able to go in the summer, usually they'll put up a big sign that says, "Welcome back, Larry." And then it'll say below that in small print, it'll say, "And Mr. Tim." And then the first time they were concerned that they hurt my feelings with that. And I'm like, "No, it's fine. He can't cash the check. So you can put his name as big as you want."
Either way, I get paid.
That's right. That's right. Except for the one time he forgot to get in the car when I was headed to a school show. That was a...
I think we've all had that experience. I do a Red Ribbon Week show, and I used to do a lot of them during Red Ribbon Week. It's a no drug show.
Uh-huh.
I got in the car without my no drug case.
With
all of my props that I use for that particular show. So I get to the show and I look in my car and I'm like, well, I have everything but the things that I need.
That's a horrible feeling. I'll tell you what I did. This show that I was doing was all about creativity. Mm-hmm. So I talked to Barry Mitchell, who's one of my best friends in the world. I talked to him on the way down and I said, "You're never going to believe what happened. That stupid duck forgot to get in the car. And I'm 3 hours away from home now." And he says, you go to Walmart and you get this and this and this, and then you build a puppet on stage on your hand. And I did. And it, you know, but I think the kids were thinking, what is this guy trying to do? But I think I got an A for effort, but it was not a very good segment.
Barry is the king of that, though. He's the king of putting
really,
something together.
Really is.
And by the way, Yasu Theodore Ishida had kind of the same question, so I'm going to give him a shout out, too. He's the magical storyteller out of Hawaii. He's terrific. He's funny. He's great.
I talked to him today, as a matter of fact.
He's did you?
Yeah. I had a nice little conversation with him. He's amazing.
Now, this is one of my favorite questions ever. This is one I did not think of asking. Conrad Colon, an excellent magician out of New Jersey, he asked, ask him about his Santa work. Now, here's the question. Does he think magicians and performers can learn something from Santa? If so, what?
Well, I'll tell you the biggest thing I learned from Santa that relates to what we do is always, always, always wash your hands. And this is before the virus. Always, always, always have hand sanitizer with you in case you can't wash your hands. And never, ever, ever, under any circumstances, touch your face.
Mm.
You know, as children's entertainers and performers, we are close with children. We're around a lot of children in schools. But we don't have a lot of contact, physical contact with them. Well, that's not the case with Santa. I mean, you might have a child come up and, you know, you'll fist bump, you'll hand them a prop, they'll hand it back. You might high five them. But with Santa, they're in your face. They're whispering in your ear. So yeah. You learn really quickly. I've got to stay healthy until I can get sick on Christmas Day, late in the day. But I can't get sick from November 1 to December the 26th. I got to stay healthy. So you do whatever you can. You know, I take vitamins and a couple other little things, but I wash my hands. I sanitize my hand. I try to do it discreetly between every child that I visit with. I don't have to do it so discreetly probably because the parents would appreciate that, especially after what we're going through now this coming December. And who knows what the Santa season is going to hold, because that's as close contact as a hairdresser, and they're right. Probably going to be some of the last ones to come back. But that's the biggest little tip that I have learned from them.
Mm-hmm.
Most Santas are not performance-based Santas. There are a few who are and are very good, and my mentors are performance-based Santas, which helped me. And Steve Gillum is one. Leon McBride, who is Buttons the Clown, world-famous clown for your clown listeners. You know him. He's now Santa. And Lee Andrews, who is Louie the Clown. Oh, yeah. Lee is the one who's responsible for me being Santa.
Hmm.
He convinced me that I could do it. A year later, there I was.
Oh, so, wow.
Shout out to Lee for that.
All right, we're going to do Factor Something John Just Made Up. Sound like fun?
Absolutely. I love it.
Is it fact? Or is it something John just made up?
All right, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to say a headline. You're going to tell me whether it's true or not and tell me a little more about it if it is true.
Sounds good.
All right. First headline. Here we go. Tim accidentally set his coat on fire during a rehearsal.
That is unfortunately true.
Oh, no. What happened?
Our magic club in Greenville, South Carolina had done an evening show the evening before the Winter Carnival in Gatlinburg a couple times in the past. Well, we would always get together at one of our members who is a professor at Furman University in the theater department. He could get a big theater for us to rehearse in, and it was super nice. So we would each do our act. We would have our stage because we had to do the whole thing except sound.
Mm-hmm.
We would rehearse the show. We would have our stagehands rehearse, you know, props. We would do this for like Tuesday and Wednesday before we did the show on Thursday. So I'm doing my segment. It was a manipulation segment at the time. And I had an act with flowers and roses and candles. So I had a vanishing candle in my hand. If you're magician listeners, they're familiar with the candle. You release pressure on it and it kind of disappears
right
into your hand. Well, that movement of it collapsing, for lack of a better word, usually makes the flame go out. So I would do a body turn so that hand is upstage. The candle would collapse. I would drop it in my pocket. And when I came back around, it was a surprise to me that the candle was gone.
Oh, no.
Well, this time the candle didn't go out. I didn't notice it. I went on with the act. I had a rose. I did a zombie routine with a rose, a floating zombie type thing with a foulard. And then I hear this whisper, a loud whisper from the stage saying, Tim, your coat's on fire. At first I'm thinking, am I hearing things? Because we're in an empty theater. Why would he be whispering? That was my thought. And so I look down and I see like a little smoke coming out from the inside of my coat now, not from the pocket. Oh, no. So I just reached down and I patted my pocket to kind of snuff out the flame. And when I went off stage, the lining of my coat had melted to my pants.
Oh, no.
So that's how close it was to being a burn and a disaster.
All right, next one. Tim fell off a 4-foot-high stage.
I hate to admit that's true as well.
Oh, no.
Well, it wasn't a direct fall. So the stage was 4 feet tall, and it was, and again, with our magic club in Greenville, we were doing a public show, and there was a table right at the foot of the stage, pushed all the way up against the front of the stage. So the table is 30 inches tall, so I've got another 18 inches up to the stage. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, I was much younger because I probably would have been in traction. It's time for me to come off the stage from spiking where my props are going to be. So I think I'm just going to hop onto the table, and then I'm going to hop onto the floor. Well, I hopped onto the table, and I was a little forward of center, and the table went forward, and I kind of rolled backwards over the table, over the edge of the table, because it's moving forward, and now I'm moving backwards. And then luckily I didn't hit my head and on the edge of the stage, but I just kind of tumbled. Got up, and later on that evening, we did the show. But that was less fun than catching myself on fire, actually.
Yeah, that's no fun at all. I admit, I fell off a stage one time. What some people don't know is I have a deteriorating brain stem. It makes me dizzy half the time. And so sometimes when I'm performing, I get the dizzies. I simply get the dizzies. So I do the best I can to make it look like I'm not drunk on stage. So one day I'm doing a show right in the middle of the show. I get the dizzies. Oh, and by the way, the brainstem thing, it's no big deal. If it doesn't progress, I'll be fine. Just if you were thinking something like that. Yeah. So anyway, one day I get the dizzies right in the middle of the show. And sure enough, it's about a 2-foot stage, not a 4-foot stage, but it was about a 2-foot stage. And I fell right off the side of it.
Oh no.
It was a school assembly. I stood back up. I got back up on the stage and I took a bow. I said, thank you. What are you going to do? I talked to one of the teachers afterwards. She said, oh, I thought you meant to do that. You were just messing around. I'm like, no.
A lot of things happen to us that they think were supposed to happen sometimes.
All right. Third one. Here we go. Tim created an 8-foot silk for Donald Trump.
That is false.
Oh.
Yeah. Even if he asked, we can't make an 8-foot silk. Oh. So that would be tough. But that one we haven't done.
His silks have got to be bigger. They've got to be better. They're better than anybody's in the world, right?
That's right. They got to be the best, right?
Right. All right. Last one. Tim is an NC2A collegiate volleyball official.
That is true as well.
Really?
Yeah. Another hat that I wear.
So with all the things I mentioned at the beginning, you also are a volleyball official for the NCAA?
I'm nuts, right? So
yeah.
Now, I don't do that a lot. I probably, during the course of volleyball season, which starts in late August and goes through October, I'll probably do that 10 or 12 times. So on days that I'm not traveling for school shows, and it's all local, I don't have to travel for that, and it's all Division II school, so I'll go do that. My daughter played volleyball all through her high school career and chose not to play. She had opportunity, but chose not to play in college. But I love the sport so much, and I learned so much about it. I just like being around the sport. It's such a fun sport, and I thought that's a way that I can do it and make a little money. Yep, that's another
hat.
That was fact. Ooh. Or something John just made up. Ah.
you have some advice for somebody first getting into this? Because it seems like when you first started, you were performing and then 911 hit and you figured out a different way to have income when there is no income for performers, just like right now. Do you have some advice for somebody who may be just starting out now or thinking about starting out now?
It's tough. I mean, I think in this climate that we're in right now, but I would just say to anybody who's wanting to start out, you just need to perform. Put yourself in every situation that you can. When I was starting out, I worked every market I could think of. I've done restaurant work. I've done festivals. I've done some fairs. I would just say get out there and work as much as you can, because that's what's going to give you the chops that no matter which area you decide to go into later, whether it be schools, whether it be corporate, whether it be churches, whether it be birthday parties, it's going to give you the chops to handle pretty much any situation that you can get yourself into. So that mm-hmm. would be the biggest thing for somebody just starting out. Find the work. Don't worry as much right now about the money. Get the experience.
Don't worry about the money, especially right now.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Well, thanks, Tim, for doing my show. That was fun.
Awesome. Thanks for having me. I had a great time, John.
Good. Do you have some social media or something that you'd like to promote before I let you go?
Sure. I have the Wonder Imagery fan book. The Wonder Imagery fan group on Facebook is called Wonder Imagery Fan Club, I think is what it's called. But it's a private group. But just click on join and I'll let you right in.
Okay.
I don't really tweet much. So that's pretty much it. TheWonderImagery.com is the website for that. My school show site is Creative School Programs, if you want to see the school programs that I offer.
Terrific. And thanks to all my Variety artists. Tell all your friends about the Variety Artist Podcast. Now go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.
That's all for this episode of The Variety Artist. But your journey continues on our website. Go to thevarietyartist.com for more strategies, insight, and resources, as well as show notes on today's guest to assist you in your career. We'll see you on the next episode of The Variety Artist. But until then, go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.